Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
We want to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, the Blue Manatee Literacy Project, which is a nonprofit that operates an independent bookstore in Cincinnati, Ohio, but more on them later. So Jill, I want to circle back to something that we like very briefly talked about in our last episode.
Yeah.
And the idea is that like, I have been endlessly and happily roasted on Book It. And I keep waiting for the opportunity to roast you. It's just not coming up because everything that like you are indulging in is totally on brand for me. So, So I'm just curious, like, how's your rewatch of Dawson's Creek going?
Oh my goodness. It's like, it's simultaneously, first of all, you're the only person I told about this. Like,
okay, so quiet between the two of us on our podcast.
Between the two of us and all the people who are now listening. But... because, you know, we, like, both very publicly own that we love Gilmore Girls and we rewatch it regularly. But for some reason, Dawson's Creek feels different to me and, like, slightly more...
Embarrassing
or trashy.
Why?
I have no idea. But can I just tell you, I am loving it. And I just remember... thinking that, like, if I had a friend that climbed in and out of my window, that was like...
Is that something that happens?
Yeah, like Joey comes in and out of Dawson's bedroom window. Like, they're friends and that's how they come and go.
Oh.
It's through the window. And you're probably too young to remember this, but when I was younger, there was the show on Nickelodeon called Clarissa Explains It All.
Excuse me. I was obsessed with Clarissa Explains It All. Okay. The minute you said they climbed through the window, I was like Clarissa?
Like Clarissa, yes. So that was like the first show where I like...
Amazing.
Having a friend climb through the window was like goals. Always friendship goals for me.
Yes.
And in the very first scene of the very first episode of Dawson's Creek, Joey comes in through the window. And, you know, it's just love at first sight is meant to be. And I don't know why. I've only told you and our podcast that I'm rewatching it, but I'm 4 episodes in and I love it.
I'm so happy for you. I need to do that with something because I do have my standard go-to rewatches, which is Gilmore Girls. It's currently the newest one. This isn't like nostalgic yet, but I've just been rewatching The Crown ever since it aired 4 years ago.
Yes.
But I want something that I didn't watch for the first time that feels nostalgic. Maybe it'll be Dawson's Creek.
Maybe. I'm excited too to get to the later episodes because I did not, I've never seen those.
Oh, okay. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But so far, yeah. But I'm totally embarrassed about it because I just do it secretly and I haven't told anyone.
I love your version of doing something secretly. It's let's tell as many people and the people that we know people who listen to this.
I know. Now everyone's going to know.
So anyway, welcome to Book It. That was completely off topic.
Oh, wait. I can tie it in.
Please.
The climbing in the window thing is kind of gimmicky.
I was actually going to say that, but I felt like I was trying too hard. But I would agree. That could be a gimmick.
If we need a try hard, it's me.
which brings us to our discussion point today. I've been thinking a lot about this. Actually, over the course of the last couple of years, this concept of gimmicks and when is something a gimmick and when is it genuinely helping the story. And I think that most media, most entertainment or forms of art have gimmicks. Mm-hmm. And I think that with fiction, it's maybe a little bit harder to like, it's not concrete. It's a little bit nebulous and it's more about like our feelings about it. Does it feel like a gimmick? Or does it feel like it's the only way the story could have been told? And I think I'm going to give an example that is not book related. in movies, there's a, I would consider sometimes a gimmick is the concept of editing a movie together to make it look like it's one continuous shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it's awesome, and sometimes it's obviously, I say obviously, but it's just my feeling, a ploy to get me to go see it. Mm-hmm. And there's a movie that came out a couple years ago called Birdman, and you couldn't escape the press about it being edited like one shot. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to go see this because everyone's talking about it. And like, yeah, that was cool. It's definitely not the first movie to have ever done it. In retrospect, after having seen it, it's not the thing I remember about it. And I ultimately don't think about that movie very often. So in my opinion, it was like just a gimmick. It didn't yeah. serve the story. I could totally see that movie being told without that gimmick. More recently, a movie called 1917 came out, and it's also shot, or I'm sorry, it's also edited to look like one shot. And I truly cannot imagine that movie being told in any other way. Ooh. It made the energy is just around the fact that they have to get this thing done really quickly. And I feel really tense watching it intentionally because of the way it's edited together.
Yeah.
That, I guess, is my point of being like, sometimes a gimmick is a gimmick and sometimes it works.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the language we use around it kind of really indicates that. Because I like when you use the word gimmick, you kind of get like a negative connotation.
Totally.
And when it works well and it's woven into the fabric of the book or the movie, then it's a hook. You know, but
exactly.
I think it sets out with the same intention of, you know, giving us something to talk about or an aspect to promote.
Right.
And when it's done well, it just becomes innovative and part of the fabric exactly. of the thing, and it enhances your experience. But it's not always how it goes.
Totally. And I think that, well, I guess then I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on gimmicks? What would you consider a gimmick? And like, when you see a book description and it sounds really unique, are you cautious or are you like immediately game and you want to read it?
I think it depends.
Yeah.
I have gotten to the point now where I'll tell you what really kind of puts up a strong reaction. Yeah, oh, like yeah. And I see it a lot in middle grade and YA is mm-hmm. when there's text messages or social media. And for the most part, I just don't like it.
Same.
There are a few books that do it very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we all watched the movie Clueless and we thought
sure.
everybody can talk like Cher Horowitz, except yeah. most people can't.
Right.
And the language kids use changes so rapidly and the things they're into and the platforms and the way they use them. And books inherently just take a long time long time in writing and then in editing right. and before they're published. I mean, it might be a 2 or 3 year process. So I think it's really hard to do well. Like my kids came home and saying the word sus, and it means suspicious.
Would have never known that.
Me neither. Okay, so there's this game called Among Us.
And oh, okay. What is this? I've been hearing.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, everyone who's like, this is a book podcast, but Jill, tell me.
Okay. So it's this game. The kids play it online and one person is the imposter and you go around and you have like all these things you have to complete.
Okay.
But if people realize you're the imposter, then you lose. And if you get to the end and you've done all the things and you were the imposter, nobody outs you, then you win.
So it's like a variation of like murder mystery, like the mole.
Yes, very much okay. so. And so the kids are always saying like they'll play together and they'll get on the same server. And Quentin was like, Truman, Pippa is sus. Just like that. And Truman was like, she is sus. And I was like, what is happening? So that was like one day, but now it's everywhere. And they're using that word all the time. And the word cap, like, you know.
What's cap?
Cap is like, no, like, I actually don't know. Who knows, Michael? I don't know.
But that's to your point, like, yes. Language is ever evolving.
Especially with this age group.
Right.
And I think if you're not enmeshed in using the language, that when and doing the activity, that when you try to capture it, even this is like my filtered take on what is happening, and I don't even fully understand it. And I just think that comes across. And so when I see that, when I see really almost any kind of technology, but the social media platforms and the slang and the texting in particular, I don't know, it grates on me. And I, generally speaking, I don't feel like it adds to the book.
Right.
And it was innovated 15 years ago, and now it's not.
Totally. And like, I think that there is an argument to be made that like, that's not for us. It's, and we're not, like, it will mean less to us naturally because the target audience, it will mean something to them. However, to your point, we've been doing it forever. And even when it was happening, when I was younger in my youth, a book came out that was huge and was so popular and critically acclaimed. And I read it and I liked this author. And so much of it was told in text message, and it just completely took me out of it.
Yeah.
I agree with you. That aspect of fiction is often, I guess sometimes it does feel like a gimmick.
No, I completely agree. And there are so many, there are as many books that do it well as totally blow it.
Yeah. And something for me that kind of goes hand in hand with gimmicks is like, a gimmick is sort of like the polar opposite of a twist ending, where it's like, with a twist ending, they don't want you to find out about it. Like, they hope you read it for other reasons. And then it's in retrospect. It's when you return to the text where you're like, when you decide if it pulled it off or not.
Yeah.
With a gimmick, it is 100% a part of its marketing. Like, it's they tell you it up front, hoping that that's what draws you in. So I think maybe, too, that is an aspect of, like, why I often feel a little bit underwhelmed by gimmicks, because it's like, okay, I know why I'm here now. So what? But, like, was it worth it? Was that enough? Like, is the story any good? Or is it just for the sake of the gimmick? And I'm curious to talk about twist endings, but that'll be another podcast. But, and so for me, I think a lot of my frustration comes from, because oftentimes a gimmick is maybe if not the first time it's being done, is not done very often, it's able to elude criticism. It's able to be, if you don't like it, you just didn't get it. You know what I mean? And I guess that's why I like have a really hard time seeing which ones I really like and which ones I didn't. Because if I liked it, is it a gimmick anymore? You know what I mean? It's just like, it's such a...
Absolutely.
It's a weird, like, abstract concept.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree.
Something that Jill and I know isn't a gimmick is how much we love the Blue Manatee Literacy Project. If you aren't familiar, BMLP is a nonprofit indie bookstore in Cincinnati where, for every book purchased, they are able to donate one to a child in need.
What I love is that they get out into the community in so many ways. Author visits to schools, helping pack classrooms with resources. Their book bank has donated over 40,000 books to community and school literacy initiatives.
Amazing. Jill and I have been lucky to call them our friends and our indie of choice for years, and we're so glad to be spreading their mission far and wide here on Book It.
Absolutely. If you are interested in learning more or donating to their cause, you can head over to their website, bluemanatee.org, and make sure that you go head out and follow them over on Instagram at Blue Manatee Books. Let's jump in. Let's talk about books we loved and hated with gimmicks.
Great. So I'm going to start with one that I haven't read yet because I'm so intimidated by it.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay, it's called Ducks Newburyport. And the description of it is that it's written in the stream of consciousness narrative style and consists of mostly a single sentence, but it runs more than 1,000 pages long.
What?
And so it's basically one sentence over the course of 1,000 pages. I picked it up at a bookstore once, and the first page gets you ready for it. I think it's like 2 or 3 sentences, but they're long sentences. And then the rest of it is one sentence. It's just, it's a, I would imagine, a study in patience and dedication, but I'm so intimidated by it because I need to know that I can take a break.
It feels stressful.
And but people love it. I mean, I've heard mixed messages, but people love it. And it even won the 2019 Booker Prize. And the Booker Prize notoriously goes to work that is doing unique things with language and writing style. And I have historically really liked the Booker Prize nominees and winners. But I'm just so nervous about it. But it feels like a gimmick.
Yeah, I am interested to hear how it goes. The combination of one sentence and 1,000 pages does not make me likely to want to pick it up. Right. But it is an interesting exploration.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you have to read it now and I think report I will. Back.
I think, okay, my 2021 goal. Yeah, people, I was just chatting with one of our Bookstagram buddies, Natasha or Nat. And she was talking about like her reading goals, and hers are like to read a shit ton of books. And so my new reading goal is simply to read Duck's New Perryport.
I love that you talked to Natasha about book reading goals, and I talked to her about cases of toilet paper.
That feels right.
It does. It feels very on brand.
It's two things that like affect both of us equally. We both need books and toilet paper.
This is true. This is true.
Anyway, what have you got for me?
So my first example is in a picture book. So go with me here.
Oh, but I love this actually.
I love when you're reading a picture book and the characters in the book are reading the book you're reading.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in it.
Yes.
I just adore that in the illustrations, and it captures my attention every time. My kids have always really like loved it and found it like surprising and engaging.
Yes, surprising, right.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that, but every time I see it, I love it.
Yeah.
Elephant and Piggy have done it in
Oh my gosh, Elephant and Piggy is so good.
Absolutely. They've done it in several books, and Kevin Henkes has done it in a couple books. And I mean, it's used very widely, but it's just, I don't know what it is. It's very cheesy. I adore it.
Yeah. Great. Me too. But I also like that. I mean, now that we're talking about it, I feel like children's books should get away with gimmicks all of the time because there's like so many different rules that go into like creating a children's book like that already like can't exist in real life, like animals talking you know what I mean, like crayons having personal, you know what I mean? So it's like there's almost no such thing as gimmicks in children's books, and I love that.
It just feels like you're in on like an inside joke.
Yes
I love it.
I admittedly don't have a ton that I love, so sorry about this list, everyone. I wrote down something, and it's controversial-ish. It's controversial adjacent. It's The Row by Cormac McCarthy. I thought this book was just okay. And let's talk about it as a gimmick, too.
Yes. Okay, so full disclosure, Michael and I did not talk about, Michael brought this book in and did not mention it at all until we got recording this. And I was looking at the notes and I said, I'm very excited that you have Cormac McCarthy on here because I have feelings. I do not like to be in the habit of disagreeing with Oprah Winfrey because—
Nor should we.
She's Oprah. Or really the literary establishment as a whole.
Right.
I don't appreciate that if you say you don't like Cormac McCarthy, you're viewed as like a simpleton.
Right.
And The Road specifically, I just, it's a view of humanity that I don't agree with. I just kind of reject outright. And reading it was like walking through mud.
Right.
I more than didn't like it. I hated it.
Yes.
And I know that that is not a popular opinion, but I just, and I don't think it's because I don't get it. And I'm like, not highbrow enough to understand it.
That's my problem.
It's not good.
And that's how I felt. Like it was very fine. That is me giving it as much praise as I can, is saying it was just okay and yes, fine.
It was all right.
And I read it for a for a lit class in college. I could feel the room's atmosphere change when we started talking about it, in the sense that I think a lot of people don't like it, but nobody feels, people who read don't feel like they're allowed to say that. And we had an open discussion about it. And the general consensus in my class was, if you didn't like it, you just didn't get it. And that is so invalidating. And, I can accept when I don't get certain things.
Yes.
I think I understood The Road and I didn't like it. And I don't think that it was, I 130% believe he could have told the same story written in a different way.
Yes. Yes. 1,000%. And this is what angers me about it. I get it.
Right.
I do. Thanks. I don't need it explained to me.
Yes.
I get it. I don't like it.
And that's okay. And I'm not suggesting that like you liking it like means anything. Like you can like it and I cannot like it.
Yeah. But I feel that about Cormac McCarthy in general.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People
period.
Love him.
Yes, they
and
do.
They just are so devoted to like reading all of his work, and I'm like, no, I'm good.
1,000%.
I just take it. I don't know. I hate that people, I hate that there's judgment attached to it in the book world, but I feel like there needs to be space for, no, I'm super smart. I get what's happening here and I'm good.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. Just more.
Just that.
Yeah, just more roasting Cormac McCarthy. I recently.
Cormac McCarthy is the new Kurt Sittenfeld.
Hold your tongue.
Stop.
I got a book here waiting to be talked about.
Stop.
Anyway, let's move on.
Are we talking about? No, let's talk about that book. I bet
this
we
one
just,
I just held up.
I bet we disagree about it.
Well, here's the thing. I think that occasionally what can be a gimmick is a retelling of a classic or reimagining a historical event. 'Cause it's what sells the book. It's arguably the main reason why you would pick it up, because it's telling you exactly what it is, and that's either going to interest you or it's not, and it's supposed to be different. I'm going to start with my historical one, I'm going to start with my retelling one that I love. And I think I've talked about this in season one a little bit. There's a modern retelling of Pride and Prejudice called Pride by E.B. Zaboy, and it's YA, showing Jill the cover.
Can
you see it?
I love the cover, yes.
And I think it is so good. It is the perfect example of taking a classic text and modernizing it in a way that feels wildly appropriate, incredibly timely, in the opposite way of what we were saying, what bothers us, which is like text messaging language that like that people aren't going to be using in a year. This feels timely in the terms of like it's a lot about gentrification. The modernized Bennett family feels totally believable in the 21st century. I think it took what made Pride and Prejudice really good and modernized it in a way that absolutely paid off. I love Pride. Have you read it?
I have not.
You should. It's really good.
Yeah, I have written it down.
Oh, good. My influence again.
I've heard really good things about it, and not just from you.
Yeah, it's so... I'm going to read the opening line, because the opening line in Pride and Prejudice is famous. Okay, if you could... And I say that, so... If I said the opening line... If I said the words, the opening line in Pride and Prejudice, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. It's every mother knows. So single man is in want of a. I've butchered it.
A truth. Yeah, but you. It's in your brain. It's become part of the cultural zeitgeist. The opening line to Pride is, "It's a truth universally acknowledged that when rich people move into the hood, where it's a little bit broken and a little bit forgotten, the first thing they want to do is clean it up." And that is, like, taking...
Yes!
It just feels so timely and clever. I loved it.
Now I'm definitely reading it. That opening line is amazing.
Yeah. So, there is a... And this won't... And I won't talk about it for very long. But there is another retelling of Pride and Prejudice that came out maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. That is just awful. And it's called Eligible. And it's the first book I ever roasted on Book It. It's episode 2. Go back and listen.
Neither one of us enjoyed it.
Yeah, it offended me as like a member of the LGBTQIA+ community. It was incorrect in its observation of Cincinnati, which is where it takes place, which is where we record. And I just think it got everything wrong about Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah, that was a gimmick, and it was solely for me to pick up the book, and it worked in me buying it, mm-hmm. but I will never read it again, and I will never recommend it.
But I want to talk about that book you had in your hand.
Okay, so I haven't read this yet.
Uh-huh.
Have you read it?
I have.
What? Jill, I'm really mad.
I read it after that episode. The book we're talking about is Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld.
Okay, I have heard... two things about it.
Okay.
That it is just okay or that it is terrible.
I would say that it is both just okay and I enjoyed it.
Okay. It's just okay and better than you expected.
Okay. So the premise of this book is that oh, God. Now remind me. Okay, so...
It's basically like if Hillary hadn't married Bill.
Hadn't married Bill. And she goes about her life. Okay, so I read this from a perspective of like... And it's come out, you know, like after the election. For me, it almost felt like...
Yeah, it just came out, right?
I read it in the way you would read fan fiction.
It sounds like fan fiction.
And so for that reason, I enjoyed it. I did not have expectations that it was literary fiction.
Okay.
So I think that's the difference. But I will say, in that case, like the gimmick, it was fun. The gimmick was the whole point. But if I was expecting like a highbrow, I was expecting literary fiction, you know, capital L, capital F, I would have been disappointed.
Which is why I think it bothers me, because that is how we talk about Curtis Sittenfeld.
I think she's a person who can exist in both worlds. Some of her work, like American Marriage, like I think those are more literary fiction. And then books like Eligible and Rodham, I think are just kind of more mass market general appeal. And some of the criticism is fair because I think people are kind of expecting one or the other. But then I also think that sometimes the criticism comes from a place of book people, not you specifically.
It's okay if it is me.
Book people place literary fiction above all other. And people who engage in writing or enjoy mass market fiction are like not of the same caliber or level. And I just sometimes wonder whether the criticism of her comes from that elitism that exists in the book world.
I want to just really quickly, you said in American Marriage, it's actually called American Wife.
Thank you.
Yeah. I loved An American Marriage. Not by Curtis Sittenfeld. I think that's fair. I don't subscribe to that idea that literary fiction is like the be all end all of, because we just, I mean, near the end of season one, there's an episode out about guilty pleasures, and we try very hard to suggest that, like, if it isn't literary fiction, it isn't a guilty pleasure.
Right.
There are so many different ways to write. All of them, when it's done well, is good writing. I want to say, I didn't know you read it, and I like that you liked it, I often like the books that you've read, and now that you've read it, I'm adding this. It's going to be Ducks, Newburyport, and Rodham.
I think it's all about expectation with that one, totally. And I read it as like a balm to the 2016 election. It's fanfic.
Perfect.
Can I tell you about a book that should be terrible, but isn't?
Oh, great.
Okay, so Texts from Jane Eyre is the name of the book. And it imagines a world in which all of the greatest characters in literary history have smartphones and they're texting each other. And I realized that's what, like, 10 minutes ago I said I hate. But...
Wow, that's true.
I know. It is the entire premise of this book. It's not, like, woven into the... There's no narration. It is just little segments of imagined text conversations between people in classic literature. It's Sherlock and Watson and Captain Ahab and Ishmael and Nancy Drew and her poor, like, boyfriend Ned and Scarlett O'Hara and Ashley. Can you imagine Scarlett O'Hara with a smartphone? It's... It's a train wreck, and it's so funny.
I feel you've told me about this before.
I read it at the beginning of the pandemic, way back in the early days. I was finishing it when lockdown started. And it is just, it's witty and charming, and it's so funny. I took a bunch, like, as I would read them, if I knew people, like, it was a shared book that we loved, I'm, like, taking pictures with my phone and texting them, and... it's just an absolute hoot. And it's it's called Text from Jane Eyre. And if you look it up, the author is listed as Mallory Ortberg, but that is that's a dead name. And he goes by Dan Laverly now. And you might know him from he slates Dear Prudence.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah, if you read that or you listen to the podcast, I love both. Or The Toast. I don't know if you remember that website. I loved The Toast. But yeah, it's his book. He has another book since then that I also enjoyed. But this is one where it is gimmicky. It should be terrible. It's all the things I said I hated. But it's so funny and so well done that you like it despite yourself.
Oh, okay. So you know what? We should do an episode of books we liked despite ourselves.
We should.
Maybe Rodham will be on that list for me. I hope it's on that list for me.
Oh my gosh, that would be so amazing.
I actually really love that within the same episode. That's a great example of sometimes something is a gimmick, but then other times you can't imagine it being told in any other way. Absolutely. And I think it also comes down to the fact that it sounds like it's just written by someone who's incredibly clever.
I think that's part of it. Like, I think you just have to have, like, a deep love and appreciation for the characters. Yeah. And also just be one of those kind of dry wit.
Totally.
People.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the right person with the right format, with the right idea.
I don't know why this came to my mind. So this is not remotely something we wrote down. And it's kind of a genre of its own, but it kind of does feel like a gimmick. So I'm wondering, and I know that you and I, well, I don't know if you've read it. I haven't really read it. What do we feel about books like 50 Shades of Grey in these terms? Like, is that a gimmick? Cause it's technically inspired by something else.
I don't know. I haven't read any of the 50 Shades books.
Yeah.
What I like about it is I like when a book is a cultural phenomenon.
Me too.
I love when we're all reading the same book and we're having book conversations.
Yes.
And so from that perspective, I loved it. I don't know. I mean, I don't either. I don't know that anybody, again, expectations. I don't know that anybody had the expectation that that book was going to be
what it became.
Yeah. Or even that it was, I think people approached it as fun. Mm-hmm. And weren't looking for, like, you know, to be elevated in their thinking about something.
Sure.
And I think sometimes, like, that's, I don't know, we just need to all have fun.
Oh, 1,000%.
And so from that perspective, I really love it. It was sort of the book equivalent of when everybody was talking about Carol Baskin having killed her husband and feeding him
maybe,
to lions.
Or maybe didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
That's a really, really funny comparison.
I just love it for the cultural appreciation aspect totally. Of it.
Yeah. I was working at Barnes & Noble, my pre-indie bookstore days, when those books were really popular. And honestly, people – and it was the front display in front of the front doors. People would just, like, literally come in, grab it, and then walk to the cash register and leave. And I agree, like, there's something about, even if I didn't like the book or I didn't read it, I do love the experience of everybody reading a book at the same time together.
I remember reading at the time an article about how the phenomenon around that book was driving the sale of Kindles.
Oh, that makes sense.
People didn't want to be seen yeah. holding it. And if you were on the fence about, like, buying an e-reader, you were like, oh, you know, it was kind
that
of the
really
impetus
funny.
To go. I remember reading at the time and just thinking it was so hilarious.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like...
It's like me with my Dawson's Creek.
Except now out into the podcast verse.
Okay, so... You know I have a thing for memoirs.
No.
Which I'm now embracing. But there's this specific, like, subgenre of memoir that I can't say no to. And it's the when the author has, like, tried something, like, for a year or some amount of time they tried to do something or incorporate a new habit. Yes, a year of yes. The first one I think I read was... Rachel Held Evans, a year of biblical womanhood, where she, like, camps in her front yard when she has her period because she's going to be a biblical literalist and live that way.
Oh.
And it's totally a gimmick. I mean,
sure.
But for whatever reason, this gimmick speaks to me. And
that is so interesting.
I don't know what it is. I'm dying. First of all, I'm dying to do this. I don't know what to pick. I want to pick a thing and I want to do it for a year, write a book about it. I don't.
Jill, you have to do that now.
I know. What is it? What is our thing? I mean.
Hey, listen, if you have any ideas, email us at info@bookandpod.com.
I know. You got to tell me because I can't decide on what the thing is, but I feel like doing this at some point in my life is like my life's calling.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
It's gonna happen now.
One of an author that I just really like for guilty pleasure reading is Jen Lancaster.
No such thing.
And she writes books specifically in this genre. All of her books are memoirs, and several of them are where she has, like, undertaken some kind of project.
Something new. Okay.
But one of my favorite ones is called Such a Pretty Fat, One Narcissist's Quest to Discover if Her Life Makes Her Ass Look Big or Why Pie is Not the Answer.
Or.
And can I read you the description
Please.
Of this book? I'm tired of books where a self-loathing heroine is teased to the point where she starves herself skinny in hopes of a fabulous new life. And I hate the message that women can't possibly be happy until we all fit into skinny jeans. I don't find these stories uplifting. I've learned I have to make changes so I don't, you know, die. And she tries. And the root of it is just funny observations. So yeah. she decides she's turning 40 and she decides she wants to be healthy.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
Right.
And so like she goes to the doctor and she's like, I want to get healthy. And the doctor's like, what does that mean to you? Because of course that's the question. And she's like, no, I actually want to be healthy.
Yeah.
But she goes about and she tries like all these fad things and she makes actual real changes in her life. But the parts that are funny are where she tries all these things and they just almost always go hilariously wrong.
Oh, it's like a really great movie montage.
It is. My favorite tidbit is she decides she wants to incorporate exercise in her life and she tries a couple different things and then she's finally like, I'm going to get a trainer. I'm going to get a personal trainer because that will hold me accountable because like I have to pay whether or not I show up. So I'm going to show up because if anything, I'm also cheap. So she signs up and when she makes her appointment, they don't tell her the trainer's name. They're just like, you know, do you want a man or a woman? Do you care? And she's like, oh, it'd probably be better to work out with a woman. And she shows up at the personal training session and the trainer is this like 5'10" blonde haired, blue eyed woman whose honest to God name is Barbie.
So that's a gimmick and a twist.
It's so fantastic.
Wow. Which, like, I'm out.
Right. Exactly. It's so funny. So I'm just obsessed with the whole genre. That is one of my favorites. It's an older one, so I thought maybe people hadn't read it or haven't seen it. But that's one of my favorites. But I'm dying to live this genre.
I had never thought about that as a gimmick, and that's true. And it's an intentional one. Like it's like the person doing it knows, like, I'm doing this for a reason. That's why it's a project and an assignment almost. Mm-hmm. And this actually is totally on brand for you too, like personally, because I was just editing one of our podcast episodes and you had mentioned, I can't remember what the context was, but you were saying how like you love to observe people and you love to observe people's like quirks.
Yeah.
And that's like, this is like the book version of that basically. It's just like insightful observation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love looking for oddities in life. It's like a part-time job for me. and that this book does that really well.
Yay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think the jury's out on gimmicks. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Exactly. I think it will always be. I think for gimmicks to exist, the jury has to always be out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe like 10 minutes ago, who knows, in the editing, we talked about how we love moments, cultural moments where everybody's reading a book at the same time. Well, we're going to try and have our own little
cultural moment,
micro cultural moment with our listeners. And if you have been following us on social media, if you listen to our first episode of season 2, you will know that we are starting a Book It book club. And once a quarter, so 4 times a year, we have an official Book It book club selection, and we're really excited about it. And our hope is that all of y'all will read along with us. We'll have prompts on our website, questions on our social media, most likely, well, I guess both on Instagram and Twitter. And we're really excited. Our first book is called The Kindest Lie by Nancy Johnson. It comes out February 9th. And then the podcast episode about it is like pretty soon after that. So it's a kind of a quick turnaround. But the book sounds so good. So we think that if everybody's who's participating does participate, it'll be a really quick, in the best way, read. Because it'll just be so, you'll be diving in. And then the week following that, we're going to have an extra episode where we get to interview Nancy about the book. And I'm so excited.
I am really excited both to talk to Nancy because the Michael and I both read kind of the summary of the book, and immediately we were like, there's going to be so many interesting things to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk to her. I'm excited to delve into some of the issues that come up in the book.
Right.
And I'm just excited.
It's her debut, so I'm excited to talk to her about that.
Yeah. I am excited to hear about what that's like. The world is so weird now, but I'm so excited for her book, and I want it to be such a success. So I'm excited for us to talk about it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited we're going to read the same thing at the same time. I loved when we read the new Hunger Games book together.
Me too. That was so fun. And we often, of course, naturally, Jill and I read books together often when we interview people, but this is very much going to be like that Hunger Games episode where we're going to talk about the book back and forth. Hopefully you guys will be listening and like either agreeing or disagreeing. And if you want to participate, head to our bookshop.org link. It's in our website. We'll have it in the description in this podcast episode where you can purchase it. So yeah.
It's going to be fun.
This was so fun, Jill. This was a hot topic.
This was. I know we were on the fence about, you know, do we have enough to talk about? But I feel like between the author who we're not talking about anymore and slamming Cormac McCarthy, we really covered all of our bases here today.
Yeah, that's it. We've either gained a lot of followers or lost all of them.
True. True.
We'll find out. Lesson learned or not. Well, Jill, until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Rakesy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Honeysuckler.